Blog Talk Radio.
Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank, and Joan Adams and I host this show. Our guest is Sheila Odette, or Astrology's Astrologer. She's doing the chart of Zenyatta this evening, the retired racehorse. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Sheila will also discuss some of her discoveries about the Mayan calendar, as well as some important astrological aspects that are affecting energy for all of us at this time. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Kate. We are on the air.
That's a welcome relief.
I'll tell you. But last show was not too good. Did you see that race this weekend? It was fabulous. With Zenyatta.
Zenyatta.
Beautiful animal.
Yes.
Oh. Sheila and
hey, Sheila.
Joanne. Hello
hey,
there.
Joe.
Hey, Joanne.
Hi.
Oh, I never. You know, Tom was really into Zenyatta, and he was showing me the YouTube videos of it of her today. My gosh, she is a tremendously beautiful, regal, and
Regal is a good word. Regal is a real good word.
And the way she dances and performs.
Oh.
And the way she does that little step, and then she paws the ground, and then she looks to see her audience, and then she turns around, looks at them, and it was, the dance is worth everything, you know. But to watch her come from way back there and go through those horses, and that she's a mare and a female, you just go, oh, my God.
There's never been a horse like her.
Well, there's never been, but this other Russian horse was pretty. You know which one I mean, Joan. Gold. What's her name? Goldakovich. That horse is also. She's also had a career 14 win in 3 seconds, and she ran. She ran the mile, I think. And you know, as nice as Zenyatta is, they said that's how mean she is. You know, we have to have two kinds of women. They could get near her, she spits on you. That guy went near her after the race, and she just went to bite him. I went, ooh.
Oh.
So we have to have both kinds of women, you know.
I don't ever watch races, and Whitey kept hollering. He said, you have to watch this. You
Wasn't
just
that
have
something?
To get in here. And I was so glad I did because, you know, most of the time I just say no, you know.
But, you know, I love the owner's wife when she said, well, she should have just stuck her tongue out.
That would have been more ladylike, yeah.
Huh?
That would have been more ladylike.
Well, when she was within, if she'd have had, I think, just 4 more strides, she'd have been ahead. It was that close. It was beyond close.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because she has a grand trine in fire. And a grand trine in fire, I call that the Gandhi trine. It's like a trine that, I mean, the moon in Leo is like the show horse. I mean, so that's showmanship. But the sun in Aries, but coming from last to first, I remember Willie Shoemaker, I think, it was Fernando or whatever. I remember watching that race, and I at that time was working with racetrack people, and I said, bet on that horse, and the horse was running last, and I was like going, oh, my God, oh, my God. That was Leo. Shoemaker was a Leo. The horse was a Leo. And you can do astrology much better with thoroughbreds than other horses. You know, but you have to. I learned astrology by going to the racetrack and timing the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Placidus and there's Coke. There's different kinds of house systems used. And I realized that Coke was better timing because it was nearer to the finish line when they'd finish. So I realized that if you're timing in reality, you use Coke. If somebody really asks you a spiritual question, then I use Placidus.
Okay.
So they're, you know, the systems, I found that Placidus works much more if somebody's asking a spiritual question. But this is an Aries horse, a very fast horse. It was interesting because I don't have an exact birth time, but if I do, the moon in her progress chart would have been at 29 of Scorpio. So that's you know, all of the stuff that's going on right now in the middle of this race and all, it's like it was almost that she did that and came up to that very last second, and then she said, now I'm going to kill you all. You're all going to die in this moment. That's what Scorpio does.
Uh-huh.
And that's what Scorpio does. And in this death, there'll be something great will happen. And that's what she did at the very last moment. At the very last moment, that's what happened. Because she was all the way up to a nose. I mean, any other kind of thing, any slight thing, she would have won. And it would have been 20. But it was interesting that the trainer's wife, they said, how are you taking this and all? And she said, well, I wonder how she's going to feel not going into the winner's circle. So because she's so used to going in there and dancing around.
Oh.
And saying, you know, but the horse, they had to euthanize the horse in the Breeders' Cup in the first race. Double, you know, the whole Scorpio thing.
Mm-hmm.
The first race that Burrell was on, he was the one that did the Kentucky Derby. That horse he was on fell. And so, you know, it's always interesting to see how, and you can imagine the money. I mean, this is, the Breeders' Cup is the highest money that there is in horse racing. I mean, those races are huge, huge sums of money. And there was more people in there. Zenyatta had brought more people in to watch this race than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really something amazing. I was going to talk about important shifts because we're in this place that November is this really powerful month. And November the 3rd, of course, was supposed to be the beginning of the Mayan seventh day. Have you heard of that?
No, tell us about that.
Yeah, it's one of the premier indication of our, you know, times right now in the map of evolutionary consciousness. And, you know, the Earth is like, you know, 16 billion years, you know, here. That's about the approximate age according to astrophysics. But the Mayan 7 day, which began on November the 3rd and goes to October 28, 2011, That's going to represent the closing days of duality and the transition to the unity of consciousness. And it also represents an increase in creation and more manifestation appears in less time. In other words, the Mayans on this calendar believe that when this starts to happen, we are going to be able to intuit and manifest faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an increase in the creative process. And we are evolving toward the Mayan kind of not end times, but the end of time in the way of consciousness. So the transition somehow the three-dimensional perception of a reality and an ascension into the fourth dimension and beyond. So it means we're basically shifting, you know, from a third chakra consciousness, which focuses on our personal power, to fourth chakra awareness, which is centered in the heart. And it's more about interconnectedness in all people. And, you know, it's supposed to be coming toward the brighter light. But, you know, in order to do that, we have to look into the darker shadows. And as we become more conscious, we become more aware of what has been in the unconscious, in the collective. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. And I think the last election, I was really looking at it from an astrological point of view, and all the bullying that was done in these commercials, all of this.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
yet we're in school trying to do these, like my grandson was telling me when he came out of school on Friday that, you know, they had a bullying, assembly. And I said, oh, my gosh, you know, I guess I'm a little naive, but I said, what happens? What do the bullies do? And he said, oh, they put your head in the toilet. You're just rattling this stuff off. And I was like, and I said, my gosh, you know, but yet, here we're trying to teach our kids in school not to bully. And then all the commercials, all the political commercials, I thought were about bullying.
Oh, I did too.
They were all, you know, and basically if you found one in 10 that was like just talking about that what they wanted to do, I would go, God bless that person.
mm-hmm.
You know? So, but in order, you know, the unconscious has to come up, you know, in myth and religion, you know, it's characterized by dragons and demons and devils and all that. But, you know, we are in a transmuting place, not a transformational place, as I said before, but a transmuting, you know, almost an alchemist place where things are really changing, you know, that the lead weight of all the fear, darkness, and duality is now being transmuted into the gold of love, truth, and unity, even though it doesn't look like it. And it's very interesting because we get letters from friends from everywhere, and we got one this week, you know, Autumn. I don't know if you know Autumn Coulter, maybe Colton.
Yes, Kate knows her.
Yeah, well, yeah, she was at your retreat, right?
I know. I love her.
Well, she was out in, where was she, Joanne?
San Francisco.
She was in San Francisco, and she was at this Women Visions conference.
I know,
and she was talking about, you know, that they were doing this meditating and all of this meditating around this lake. And there's so, you know, there's so many groups like that that are meditating to transmute the energy into higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's what the Mayan thing is. But, you know, that's not the only thing. By the way, my grandson's mother had a baby on November the 3rd, so I said, oh, my God, what kind of dog is that going to be? You know? So we have a new, his name is Joey. She's married to another man now. So my grandson can't understand why Joey's not my grandchild. It's hard for him to get that.
That's
and I told his parents that it's not my job to explain that. Well,
good
come
luck.
On. Well, come on. So November the 5th was the new moon, okay? And, of course, it was a double Scorpio moon at the most powerful point of the zodiac, which is 15 degrees of the zodiac, which is the middle of, on the Uranian wheel, it's the middle of the fixed signs, and it's also the middle of the cardinal signs. So there is another manifestation. And again, you know, when I'm saying you see a new moon in Scorpio, like happened on November the 5th, I think of the story, I don't know if you've ever heard this story. Well, you know, when the movie The Empire Strikes Back, we've all seen that, right?
Right, right, yes.
So when Luke Skywalker is, you know, he's a Jedi Master, for people that don't know. And in that scene where he comes face to face with Darth Vader,
mm-hmm.
and they're up there having that, and Vader, there's a bottomless pit under them, and Vader can't afford to kill Skywalker because he realizes that the power that Luke has gained is as Master of the Force. And Vader wants to really use that power for his own evil purposes. But, you know, evil has no power. It's simply God's power turned inside out. But Luke he's they're up there fighting with these things, and Darth Vader yells, "Join with me, and together we'll rule the universe." And I will not, Darth Vader, you know, Luke says, he cries out, "Not after you killed my father." Now, there's a complete hush in the movie when I saw it. You know, there is, somehow you knew that was the moment, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember what he says, Kate?
No. No, you tell me.
You don't remember what Vader says? It's one of the most profound moments of all moments of all times in the movies. He says, "I am your father."
Okay.
And then Skywalker, he's just like stunned. And I've had arguments with this with people over this. They then go on kind of with the fight, but he goes over the edge. And Luke Skywalker, he lets go. And I remember I was working with somebody, and he said, "No, he didn't." I said, "Yes, he did. Get the movie. Yes, he did. He left go, and he just dropped. And he really was dependent on the fact that he was a Skywalker, you know, that he would be saved." So at that crucial moment, remember, Princess Leia, who had just escaped from the city planet herself, physically hears Luke cry out. And immediately she turns her craft around and scoops him up. And that's a great moment because, you know, that's the kind of moment we're in right now. You know, faced with that decision of the father, do we think we are born of, you know, original sin, or are we really a source of the shining light? You know, if the Jedi really believed in all his integrity and all of the stuff, then he had to put his courage up front and let go. And leave go and drop into the darkness, which is what this double Scorpio thing is. And, you know, when he did that, he was saved. So, you know, we are really spiritual beings going through a material experience is what that really says in many ways.
Yes.
But the, you know, original sin, it's a limitation of awareness that a human being experiences when he or she comes into a human body. And to enter the plane in a physical body, we narrow the range of our awareness to concentrate our attention on a particular thing that we have to work out. So it's similar to some kind of generals coming down and talking to their lieutenants. So we really don't know the whole picture. And in moments of courage, I think, in moments of courage is the intuitive thing that all of a sudden we know somehow the full picture. But this whole double Scorpio thing is that's what we're being challenged with. So also, Chiron turned direct at 26 degrees of Aquarius. And I think Chiron, for me, in a chart, represents a key. It's a key. It's a door that's been closed, like that door we see of Jesus with no handle on. And then we have to, Jesus, that door has to be open from inside out. It can't be open from outside in. And then on the 18th, Jupiter turns direct in Pisces, and Venus turns direct in Libra, and Jupiter represents expansion. So there's all kinds of things that are going on, and then by November 21st, we're at the full moon, which is, again, 29 degrees of Scorpio, which is, interestingly enough, Sunetta's moon that day of the race, her moon. So, you know, I always look at the representation of what's happening on the planet to put it with astrology, because you can say all kinds of stuff, but unless you get a metaphor about the miner who was under the earth running and training and carrying bars, and then when they said to him, what's his name, Joanne?
Edison Pena.
When they said to him, "Do you want to be to ride in the New York Marathon to lead the parade or do anything?" He said, "No, he was going to run." Which I thought, that is like coming from the darkness to the light. That is totally right there, the definition. And in the middle of the race, he could hardly walk, and they put ice bags on, and he walked the rest of the way. So it was that 26 miles. I mean, for him to be he was under there 33 days. And training all that time. Well, he said he didn't train. Did any of you see him on David Letterman?
No.
Well, he doesn't speak English, and he sang Elvis Presley. It was adorable. He got up and pretended he had the guitar and did this little gyration and sang Elvis Presley. It was one of the cutest moments of all time. And this man then got to go to Graceland. And to him, I would think that would be like heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is such was such an Elvis Presley fan. Joanne, did you want to comment, or did anybody?
Yeah.
I can feel her going, ugh.
Oh, you're good. Well, you know what? I got interested in astrology many years ago when I heard about Scorpio being the doorway to heaven. And so what we're talking about is heaven's doorway is really blasted open here. And we have a friend in our group that meets weekly who's always asking about what God she would feel comforted if there was a personal God. And I said, well, look in the mirror, because that's the one you got. That's the one you've got. And it's, you know, that is a mind-boggling thing to believe, but to me, that's exactly, our feet are to the fire on that one. You know, our feet are really on the fire. And to me, the times now are such, can you really feel that you deserve to receive the blessing that is yours? If you can use this radical forgiveness to forgive yourself of all the stuff you think you've done and have kept you from the promised land or whatever it is, the hope and dream that you've got. I mean, you have the courage now to look at that, forgive it, and move into the light. And to me, that I think that's what's going on, I know, in my life. And I have a friend who got an email from, she's really an acquaintance, and talking about her experience, and she's this person has written books. I mean, she's been on, she's not a potato chip in the spiritual world. I mean, the esoteric world. And she's the kind of person that goes and helps form cribs and pyramids and whatnot. And it just came back from doing that in Mexico for some, how you do it, but that's what she's doing. And she was also in October at this big crystal cavern in Arkansas, doing something with crystals and having a big meeting there with lots of speakers. And there were about 25 earthquakes that occurred in that weekend in Arkansas around that event, which very interesting. I mean, there was a correlation there. And when she was talking about how she came back sick, she said both these events, and she's into healing. She doesn't get sick easily. And she said these illnesses were like cold and like flu-like symptoms, and medicine doesn't touch them. You just have to endure and go through them. And to me, that's the process that I think is happening now with this Mayan thing, and the shift is we're really each of us in some personal way being asked to forgive the deepest part of ourselves that doesn't think we're worth it, that does not think we deserve to reach the promised land. I mean, and what is interesting to me too about it is I've been working on this a long time personally too, is those of us who are givers. I mean, I was raised by a woman who gave. I mean, she was a Jewish mother, a Presbyterian Jewish mother, you know. If she gave and was unable to receive.
Mm-hmm.
I learned great lessons from that, and it's very, very difficult for these light workers that many of us are, you know, so light workers, to realize that you have to visit the darkness to bring light to it. You do.
Mm-hmm.
And the darkness abides in every one of our souls. So to me, that's the personal application I bring to this, is that in some personal way, each of us is being challenged to face the darkest parts of ourselves, forgive it, and move into the light. And I'm telling you, it takes courage to do that these days, because it's not for sissies.
It's like a Scorpio.
What do you think about that?
Are you asking me?
Uh-huh.
I'm totally just sitting here awestruck. I just listening to you.
Oh.
I'm clueless. y'all are always way off somewhere, and I'm just, you know, I'm such a grounded soul, you know.
Well, I'm talking about.
You wouldn't be on the phone if you were grounded.
No, I'm talking about groundedness. Yeah.
I guess I'm an earthy soul. Maybe that's the word.
You're an earth angel.
In relationship to that, I was thinking about that the jockey on Zenyatta, who I've been sending prayers to him, because I hope he gets over that, because he was so, he was really in a dark, dark spot to forgive himself for that, for what he felt was his fault. And I don't think it was. It's just
I think Zenyatta was in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the horse was definitely in charge. And, you know, I was interested in the evening news because in the evening news, there was the evening news broadcaster on one of the big stations did not in any way even act like she lost the race.
No.
He talked as if she won the race.
Well, it didn't feel like she lost it.
No, no. Anybody that saw the race did not feel like, you know, that she lost at all. And it's like when you watch a great tennis match or you watch and then they write it in the paper or they say this person lost and you just read that and you have not experienced it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have not experienced the trial and you have not experienced all the sweat and all the stuff that goes into a match and how close it really is. Even sometimes when it looks like 6-2, it's much closer than that in tennis. But you know, that's why we have to stop just listening to paparazzi. We have to stop. We have to begin to experience ourselves and get our own information.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really, really important to do that. And you know, this whole thing is about meditation and ceremonies and ritual. That's what the whole Mayan thing is saying to really do. There is, you know, a feng shui, astro feng shui exercise, you know, to do during this period of time. And you like get a shovel and go someplace or a spade and you dig and you get an item that symbolizes what you want to release and put it on a piece of paper in which you have written your intentions and matches and a lighter and bring them with you. And because this is all Scorpio work, you do the ritual at night. You don't do it in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And Scorpio demands a sacrifice before bestowing its blessings. That's one of the big things about Scorpio. Therefore, you know, between this new moon and the full moon, it's letting go of something or someone to which you are attached or even what we call addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a lover. It could be a food or drink or attitudes about money or anything. And then you decide what you really want to sacrifice, and you imagine how you'd feel once you're free of it. Once you're clear, you write it down, what you're releasing and what blessings you'd like to trade for it, because Scorpio loves to barter. So, you know, there's a bargaining thing, like in that five things, you know, what's her name talks about. So you find an item that represents what you're releasing, even if it's a bag of potato chips. Hey. And once you found a spot that feels right,
I don't release those easily.
Huh?
I don't release potato chips easily.
I know. You dig a hole in a few feet, and then you sit next to it, and you write the item, and then you say, this is a Plutonian Scorpio exercise, and you tell about the attachment or the addiction, and then you it can even shed some tears, which is really good. People say water well, if you can really cry, which you usually can when you're talking about stuff like that. And then you read the paper and you throw it in the fire and you cover it up and you give thanks to Mother Earth and thanks to Pluto for giving you the strength. So this is a time, like Joanne was saying, for radical forgiveness and attachment and forgiveness and all those kind of things. And there, you know, Oprah Winfrey is, I couldn't believe, I just watched George Bush on
Oprah, yeah.
And I sobbed. I sobbed all the way through it. You saw the real relaxed man and just the loving man. I just could see his heart. It was interesting that what he said in the end, you know, too. And when she said, do you want to comment on Sarah Palin or anything, he said, you're not dragging me into the swamp.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just quite, did you see it, Kate?
No, I try to avoid George W. Bush, thank you.
Well, the point is, that is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That is exactly what radical forgiveness is about. The things that most annoy us, the things that most put us on the edge, the things that most annoy us, I thought, no, I'm going to watch this. And I watched it. How long was it, Joanne? I was crying.
Oh, it didn't take but very long. I never really doubt that this is a good man.
You know,
well,
I mean,
I did watch the Matt Lauer interview.
Uh-huh. I didn't watch that one yet. What did you think, Joan?
I love him. I've always loved him.
I'm
a Republican. Y'all on the opposite side of this whole political thing than me.
Well, the father.
No, I don't know about that.
The father and the son. You know, it's interesting to see. You know, these, like the Kennedys and the Bushes, these like cocoons of like energy. You know.
Yeah. Family power.
And, and the history, you know, and it's kind of chilling, you know, to watch that kind of thing, the destiny and the, because after all, I mean, I thought he was, you know, to really talk about the drinking. I don't know if he did that with Matt Lauer, but that was the first thing that came up with Oprah Winfrey. You know, and then she said, "Were you a drunk?" And he said, "Well, I was." What's that? What did he say? I wasn't knee.
Yes, it was. He was not. He was an ugly drunk. His mouth went off. No, the political thing we're talking about here now is really part of this process that's going on, because that's going to break down. It's going to transmute into an appreciation of we can all agree to disagree and love each other. You know.
Yeah.
That's the point. And what's happening politically now is it's gotten so vicious that, and that's often what happens before a breakthrough comes. It gets so awful that something has to break into clarity. You know, it's like the darkness before the dawn. And I do think this is part of what's happening right now, not only in our country, but globally. I mean, things are really going to shift dramatically, I think, in the next year on this. Because it couldn't get much worse, could it? It really couldn't.
Well, one of our friends wrote us another email which said she was very, very mad and almost suicidal about the health bill and every single thing. And it was really, you know, and then she wrote back and she said, we're getting, and you're a nurse, Kate, so you're getting things from Canada and things from India and things from, you know, all these other countries. You know, she's bandages. She's a home care nurse. I mean, she's, you know, what do you call them?
Home health.
Home care.
Yeah, yeah. She goes around. And she was saying we get bandages from Canada. I mean, medicine from Canada.
There's those bandages that were made in China but sterilized in Canada.
And
how does that work? I mean, you know.
You know, well, you know, to me, Joanne read this real negative thing, and I went, well, that's pretty global.
Yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
adding their piece there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can look at it a different way. You know what I mean? So
that's the name of the game, is being forced. I mean, to look at it a different way and see it a different way and accept it, find an acceptance of it in a different way with heart and love instead of judgment.
Well, that's
right. I mean, we're in a tough time. We really are. It's really quite critical right now.
Yeah,
well, and the other thing that Brian Katie, that, you know, is that true? Is it really true? And how do you feel when you think like that? Because every single thing we do is our story, and you know what part of the story we're building our life on. And if we choose to build our storyline on a negative part of our life, then we chunk up on that negative part of our life. And I think we are seeing people now, like on Oprah, that Tyler Perry and Portia de Rossi and Ricky Martin and all these people that are, it's like a deluge of these people who are coming out telling people that the way all these years of suffering and pain and agony over anorexia and everything, over homosexuality and all, that if indeed they're saying, it doesn't have to be that way if we begin to tell our story differently. And, you know, the don't ask, don't tell thing is just, like, ridiculous. I mean, what is that telling our children? I mean, Portia de Rossi said her mother said it was okay if she was gay, but just don't tell anybody. So that's the same thing as the policy of the Army, you know, don't ask, don't tell, which causes all this anxiety and anorexia and food disorders and cutting and just enormous amounts of pain.
Yeah, our friend Joel was on the show last week, and he is, I talked to him after the show was over, and I was wondering, how much of his major depression could have been attributed to his, you know, coming out of the closet as a gay man. And what did he think homophobia in our society, how has homophobia in our society contributed to his major depression? And he really responded to that. So he's going to come on the show again and discuss homophobia and major depression and gay people.
You can't imagine that you truly, in any situation, any party, any dinner, anything, any religious service, any kind of thing that you do, you can't be yourself.
Yeah.
You always have to be looking over your shoulder or wondering, or is somebody gonna out me, or is somebody, it must be horrendous.
Oh yeah.
To have to live that way. And a story that I heard was in this group setting in a very religious place that, where they work with men and all. And this guy was, the teacher was a Christian teacher, and really going off on the sins in the Bible about homosexuality. And so this man that was about to graduate stood up and said, "Thank you very much, because I know my family hates me, I know my friends hate me, and now I know God hates me," and walked out.
Yep.
And nobody went after him.
Right.
And
my
God, he could have committed suicide. He could have committed suicide in that moment. That's just a shame.
Yeah.
That's the horror.
And that is Scorpio. Scorpio is all about hidden things.
Hidden. Yeah.
Hidden, and transformation and transmutation and coming and being in the darkest place and rising up out of the ashes and into. But it's all about a different story. The minute the story is reframed, the minute somebody is with you and says, "Oh my God, I've gone through that too," or "I'm just like that," or any kind of thing like that. And the other person goes, "Oh, I mean, you know, I remember working with someone who was really molested by her brother. And then when they found it out, the brother was sent away to private school and it was never talked about again."
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know, she was then in her 30s and she just said it to me. And it was very interesting because it's like, You cannot just tell somebody to go and, you know, after the perpetrator or after, because when it's like a brother and sister like that, it was a loving act. It was not, you know, and then everybody shuns it and everybody, and the child just gets so confused. And that becomes part of their story. And then they get into sexual promiscuous stuff, and she was into all this stuff. So, you know, very slowly, I told her to go for a walk with her dogs and or do whatever and just tell three other people. And you know what happened? When she went on the dog trail, she met this woman and they sat down and they talked and the woman said, "That happened to me." So God works in synchronicity. Then finally she told the other sister and the other sister said, "That SOB, he said he would not do that to you if he left me. If he did it to me." So it slowly all unraveled. But she was released from this don't ask, don't tell thing.
Yeah.
From this whole living this whole family. And she had the courage to begin to unravel it so that the family, the whole family was living in a lie, you know? She may be listening to me here.
Well, yeah, but a therapist told me once that the thing about a secret, family secrets, and family secrets were really big, like with our parents' generation.
Yeah.
You just didn't, they were just things that were never spoken of again.
Yes.
That's the beginning of mental illness, really.
Oh,
all
yeah.
all that stuff, that looking over your shoulder, knowing something you can't say again, all that stuff.
You know, I always, there was a book that I read one time. It was an interesting book, but I forget what book it was. But this one, it was about children sitting around the table, and then the father, it was like 5 o'clock, and they children went down and drug the father off to bed, and the other kid said, "Oh, my gosh," and he said, "Well, don't they do that in your house?"
Yeah. Right.
Because
we always put daddy to bed.
We always put daddy to bed right after dinner like that. So, you know, see. And I just put the book down and went, oh, my God, you know.
Well, the net effect of all this, this Scorpio thing that's happening this month and this whole Mayan calendar bit is to really say this stuff is not going to keep hidden. It's going to be coming out. Because we're going to be forced to deal with it. It can't be, you know, denied any longer. And just look at this, this what's happening. It's huge. It's huge.
Well, I think that the Earth and the universe, it doesn't recognize good and bad, black and white, judgment and not judgment. The only thing that the universe really recognizes is balance and imbalance. And it will try desperately to balance itself out. That goes for the human body. That goes for the story. That goes for anything. We are part of the universe, part of the energy. And if there's an imbalance, then somehow the only thing that's recognized is how to get in balance.
So now we got the message now is stop wobbling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the big thing
The
Abraham stuff is you're swimming upstream and turn around and go downstream. And I go, what if you're treading water? Because a lot of people are treading water. You know, they're not going upstream and they're not going downstream. They're just
not going to be able to get away with it. Can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
We can't.
On a different subject, also, Neptune, you know, is going direct. But it just seems like I have to talk about, I don't know if anybody's seen Hereafter.
No.
And well, if
I
you can't
see that.
Run, fly, whatever you need to do to get into this movie. First of all, I was just desperate to see this movie. So we went to see it on a Monday, you know, when there was hardly anybody in the theater. But Clint Eastwood, you know, you're so used to a lot of television things and a lot of things, instant gratification, in other words. And Clint Eastwood is a director that is very methodical and he's a genius at just putting the pace and slowing you down. You know what I mean? He just slows you into a rhythm, and then after a while, after he's rocking you, he goes, okay, now I have you, right? But I'll just say about this movie, because you'll know it. If you've seen any of the trailers, it starts out with a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tsunami, and then there is a thing that's just, you know, it's like the butterfly effect. That whole thing, if you flap your wings, the butterfly flaps its wings in China, and there is an earthquake someplace else eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole movie is about. There used to be a movie called The Butterfly Effect. It was a brilliant movie with Ashton Kutcher. It's one of his best movies. But this is about that. It's about two people, one coming from the top of her career, this French newspaper reporter who is like in France, like Katie Couric or, you know, Diane Sawyer, and this psychic who is literally hiding, which is Matt Damon, okay? He's literally doesn't want anybody to know. And you're thinking, how in the world can this work itself out? You know what I mean? But there is so many things in what we're talking about in the movie, and usually movies that are very poignant to what is happening in the universe, filmmakers, really fine filmmakers, make these films to take it forward faster. It's like, you know, I was talking about The Empire Strikes Back here, about that scene in that, which was a monumental scene, and you know that George Lucas had none of the kind of stuff they have today. I mean, he did that hologram with Princess Leia, remember, on that thing. He did stuff when they had no kind of, they didn't have any kind of the tech stuff they have today. I mean, it was monumental what he did beside the movie. What he did technically was just so beyond its time. Him and Spielberg did stuff that was so beyond their time.
I think I'm going to have to see Star Wars.
Oh, you haven't seen any Star Wars?
No.
Oh, please.
The grandchildren love it. Just love it.
Oh, children just take to it like it's just, you know, it's a universal story. It's you know, there is Star Wars, and then there's Lord of the Rings, and there's, you know, these movies are, and then Joanne, what is it called, The Dark Crystal?
Dark Crystal, yeah.
Joanne
oh,
is.
Oh, my God, that was way before its time.
Yes, Joanne was really into The Dark Crystal.
It's great. Yeah.
And, you know, I had just seen Matt Damon in Invictus about Nelson Mandela. It's a fabulous movie. But I said, I think they should have got somebody else to play that part in all my, you know. And I was recasting it and, you know, doing all this stuff. And then I said to Joanne, I just don't think, you know, Matt Damon, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so then next day, honest to God, day after, I'm sitting there in a hereafter. I mean, I was doing the ugly cry. You know the ugly cry where you heek up, people around you think you're nuts?
Yeah.
You know, you're going, And I said, now I have to eat my words, you know?
Yeah, I bet.
Now I have, because he's so absolutely exquisite in this movie. He's absolutely exquisite. Well, and there's a lot of stuff about psychic and a lot of stuff about hereafter and a lot of stuff, you know.
So what's happen when you die? Just
yeah.
You go with the dead. Yeah, it's really.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're eating today. We go to lunch, and the waitress who's so wonderful out there came up and she said, hey, I want to tell you a story. And we said, okay. And she said, a 20-year-old was in a terrible crash about 3 weeks ago, and it was her nephew. She was at the funeral. So the father was on, this kid took pictures. He was into pictures and environment. And so the father was on his blog, and he kept changing the pictures on the blog. And he had him cremated, and he had the urn on the bed, and he was doing stuff in his room and doing all this stuff. And so the stepmother was going to school, and this little six-year-old came up to her and tugged on her arm. And he said, Jeff wants to tell you to let his blog alone and to stop changing things in his room. and he gave
stop all of it.
Them their address. The six-year-old.
Oh.
So the mother took his number for him to talk to the father who was doing this. So the father talked to this six-year-old. And that's exactly what the movie's about, you know. And I thought, I looked at her and I thought, oh, my gosh, if you had any questions about what was happening in that movie, there it was in living color. Right, Joanne?
Well, that's what's happening in the world. It truly is. You just open your eyes. It is. That's part of the effect of what the astrology is showing us is working to empower us to look and see and experience despite our lack of imagination and belief. It's there.
Well, let me ask you one then. Y'all watch a lot of movies. Did you see Flatliners?
Did I see what?
Flatliners.
No. Years ago.
Yeah. Tell me what it's about. I think I did.
These kids, they were college kids experimenting with death.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember about that. Yeah.
I thought that was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they were doing was as they died, and they reviewed their life.
Yeah.
And they had to undo all the wrong they had done.
Wow.
Or ask forgiveness or whatever. Do you remember that thing?
Yeah, I think
that
I do.
That struck me. Now I don't watch a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
But that thing really got to me. It was like, yep, that makes sense to me.
Well, see, Jonah, that's what I think is happening right now, except we're living it.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. Yes,
yeah,
I think that's why I was.
That's it. And it's not comfortable.
Right.
Well, there's a movie called The Butterfly Effect, which was a movie by Ashton Kutcher. And what that movie was is something horrific happened, and then they all, he said he wanted to go back. He had the chance to go back and change it.
Ooh.
And so he would go back. There were three different scenarios. He went back and changed. And it ended up just as horrific in a different way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it was fascinating, you know, that if this would have happened, like the jockey was saying, if I would have rode Zenyatta different, then Zenyatta would have won.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that because the lesson was in the horse losing by a nose.
Right.
Well, the fact of the matter, when you watch that race, that horse was so far back. How in the world it was ever going to get? It was a miracle. I mean, to watch it.
Oh.
Wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Oh
I
my God! It
my
was
breath.
Just takes your breath away.
Well, it's not a win-lose thing. It was
no,
a win-win
it was a
thing. And for all those women that were standing there and all the people that are courageous enough, you know, to do things and just to go forward. And the man in the race, the man, you know, the miner.
Oh, Edison Pena, yeah. Yeah, very, yeah.
Well,
you
don't
have
to have
notes
to remember all these names.
Yeah, I can also have to say that I can see a listening, I've thought this before. Because in listening to Bush again today, this man was a man of integrity and purpose and principle, working his best, doing his best to do what he did, despite of how I can second guess and disagree with him. The fact is, I can see in history it being said that without the action taken as inadvisedly and as it was on the basis of poor information, but still happened, I can see, say, 50, 100 years from now, I can say this: the peace would not have come to the Middle East that. If without that, I mean, I can see how a positive can emerge from this horror, which we're now seeing as horrible, which indeed it is in so many personal ways. But in the larger picture of perspective, you can see history judging it much differently.
Well, it was very good for me that I saw Michael Moore's thing about how he sat there for the 7 minutes. And, you know, even when I was watching the Michael Moore movie about that, I was wondering if somebody had whispered that in my ear and I was sitting there. And somebody had said that to me, and I was sitting there looking at those children. I don't think I'd have jumped up.
No.
I mean, it's a lot to take in. I mean, your brain has to process. And it's so horrific. It's like when somebody tells you someone dies, it's so horrific that some people never take it into way after the funeral. The brain.
Well, let alone 3,000.
So I even when I was watching, you know, the Michael Moore movie, I thought, well, I really don't know if I was in that position what I would do.
I'm not going to criticize yet, yeah.
And he said, here I was in front of these children, and he said, those children, I was looking at the innocence of these children, which is where he was supposed to be.
Yep.
was looking at what I represented by looking at these children. So it was really interesting to hear him tell you how he processed
what was in his head, yeah,
at that moment. And he said, then I thought after the 7 minutes that in crisis you get up and walk calmly, you don't run, you just walk. He must have been in shock. I mean, if you're the president of the free world, and I mean, it was such a catastrophic moment for everybody. You know exactly where you were at the moment. I mean, I turned on the morning thing. You thought you were watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That did take forever to register for me.
What?
Like I just couldn't take that in.
Well, yeah, it was. I thought I was watching Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
That plane flew into the building, and I thought, what? I mean, your mind would not process it.
No.
Well, this is interesting. I have an Israeli friend who was watching it. He saw the first plane go into the tower. His mother calls him from Israel. She says, you've just had a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, you know, we're so removed from this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Israeli people and the conflict they have had. And
they
so
live with
forth.
It daily, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different perspective.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they have children. I mean, their children are sitting in classrooms being afraid to be bombed every day. How do you learn that way? I mean, it's so hard to concentrate if every single minute you're in terror. I mean, you're in terror to walk outside.
Well, but you learn to live with it. That's what you do.
Well,
you
I know that it becomes a way of life,
yeah.
But you don't know if your mother or father, you're going home and the whole family's going to be gone. I mean, I'm looking at these people in Haiti now after this, you know, after all this and now this flood and now cholera. And, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, Heaven's Gate is opening. It's open for us to walk through. All we have to do is walk through and do it. Okay?
Yes. Let's see. We have
cholera or what?
We have a caller on the line. Just a minute here.
Oh, hi. Hi, Kate.
Well,
Steve.
Here you are, Hi, Steve. How are you?
I just wanted to call in and say I really enjoy my Tuesday nights. I get home at 5 o'clock on the button and listen to your first show, and then I call my ma, my sister, for that half hour in between, and then I enjoy listening to this show also. So great job, and, you know, it's fun. And, you know, the theme of this show, what I've listened to many of them, and it's kind of like, let's all just be nice to each other and help mm-hmm. each other, and that's what it's all about, you know, following the golden rule, whatever, however you want to phrase it. But anyways, I just wanted to call in and say hello, and keep up the great work, and create a Squidoo lens about each of your podcasts. I think they're very valuable, and I really enjoy listening to them. So, anyways,
wow. Well,
what's
we
your name? Thank you.
Steve, we appreciate your support and the fact that you appreciate us. We really appreciate that very much.
We
thank
certainly
you.
Do. Thank you.
Definitely. And you know, the thing is that lenses are going to live for 100, 200, 300 years. So we're at on the tip of the iceberg as far as the internet goes. And learning to help other people while we're also helping ourselves. So you both are pioneers, and I really dig listening to you.
Well, we love you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Take care now.
All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Bye.
There is a loyal listener.
Yes.
Well, wasn't that sweet? That was sweet.
That is sweet.
Yes.
He does a lot of charity work. Too.
Yeah.
He's a sweet man.
Yeah,
that's what we're about. Is what he got them. I think that's what we're about. It's really hard to remember that in the midst of some of the stuff you read in the paper. But there you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
As the Course in Miracles said, remember that everything is either love or a call for love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every single thing that is, you know. We're all beings of love.
Well, we're retraining ourselves. I mean, it's easy to have a knee-jerk reaction against who any of these political figures that you may or may not like, whether it's Obama or Bush or whomever. But the thing is, we need to pray for them. They're the rulers of our country, and we do need to be a little bit more generous.
I cannot imagine getting out of bed in the morning and having a not one but 20 crises. I mean, not one crisis, but people coming in from everywhere. You know, it must be. Who would want the job?
I mean,
no.
Yeah. I'm talking about being president.
Yeah. I'm talking about being president. I mean, it's just, it's you know, my gosh, it's just. It's mind-boggling to even think about one person being the commander-in-chief. I'm sure that, I know there's a lot of help, but still, it's, you know, it was like when George Bush said that Condoleezza Rice said, don't come home, and all of the security people said, don't come back to Washington, and he said, you know, he overrode all of them on that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I can't hide in a bunker somewhere when the American people are under attack. I mean... What message is that? And that's a message in itself, you know? And I was really, you know, when he said I should have landed the plane. But then...
That was in Katrina. He should have landed the plane.
The helicopter.
Oh, yeah, that's I saw that. And that was very, very true. But, you know, he's a human being, for heaven's sakes. And,
yep.
He,
well,
you know, the,
yeah.
Yeah, it is true that I've struggled with George W. Bush. What can I do? I can't help it.
His
we
name
on the other
is not well.
But I need to, you know, this whole thing that's coming up with his book and his interviews, I think is helping us soften our hearts towards him. And
that
that's a good
him
thing.
Human.
I always thought he was funny, though.
Yeah, he's a good.
That wonderful thing about when he said, I was really drunk at 40, and I turned to the table and said to this woman, how is sex after 50? He said, my mother and father and my wife did not appreciate that. So he said, I turned 50, and she called me and said, well, how is it? I said, even though, well, how is it? So, you know, that sense of humor is really necessary. I do think that Obama has a sense of humor too, and I, you know, I think all of them need that sense of humor because without the sense of humor,
oh my God, yes.
I mean, we're.
I wonder if Calvin Coolidge had a sense of humor. I wondered.
Well, Joanne, why don't you just go into the hereafter and find out.
Well, we've come to the end of the show, and it's been fun. That's been great.
It has been fun. Y'all are just wonderful.
Yes. Love and kisses.
Love
to you. Radical forgiveness to all.
Yes.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.